This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn DeGeek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Karen Chatton from Gardnerville, Nevada. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 11th, episode 2368. Good morning, horse world.
When your start time's on Saturday and your finish time's on Sunday, and it doesn't get much better than best conditioned, and completing the challenge is the challenge, you're an endurance rider.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning. Of course, Karen is here the second Tuesday of every month talking about endurance riding. And today on the show, we have Karen's endurance tip on getting medications for less, getting your Class A license, the Equilab app. There's a lot of apps out right now. Saddle fitting the endurance horse and horse trekking in Mongolia. So listen in to today's show. Are you planning on going horse trekking in Mongolia? Is that
not anytime soon? It sounds like quite a fun thing to do, though, for those searching for, you know, the next great adventure.
Yeah, true adventure, true adventure.
True adventure.
Speaking of adventures, now you had a bit of an adventure with one of your horses. That was Bo. Can you give us a quick recap on what happened and an update?
He had an impaction colic last month, and so he got to go to the vet hospital and spend a few days there. And fortunately, he came out of it. He's doing really well. He's back home, back to his mischievous self, pulling stall mounts around. I noticed last night that part of my rain gutter was down again and rattling buckets, and he's back to his, you know,
usual self.
He's Junior's coming over after school, and we're going to go out for a little ride, walk kind of thing today and start putting him back into a little bit of work because he needs that. He's not good being an idle horse just sitting around.
I get that. But your weather hasn't been terrific for riding, has it?
Not great, no. Especially Sunday. They actually recorded some wind gusts over here up to like 200 miles an hour.
I heard that. I thought that was near you.
It was, yes. It wasn't as bad down in the valley where I am, but especially
well,
up in the mountains.
Your house would be on the ground.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Well, yeah, when we hit even, you know, 80, 90 miles an hour winds, things start coming apart. So, higher up when they're getting up to close to 200 or so, that's crazy.
Is that on some of the balds? I mean, no trees would survive that. That's a Category 5 hurricane.
Right. It's like at the ski resorts. You know, it's like that's not a good day to go skiing.
No, definitely not. I wouldn't want to be on a ski lift on hanging down with your feet hanging down with 200 mile an hour winds.
I know. But actually, we've had more of a mild winter this year so far. We're below on the snowpack. Where I believe last year, I think we were a little over by this time.
Yeah, it didn't melt forever last year.
Yeah. So one of the things I have done recently, actually back in November, was I went and actually passed my Class A driver's license tests and got my Class A driver's license. So now I am legal to drive, you know, basically the same rig I've been driving since 2003.
Now, are they starting to crack down out there on this? I know we've talked about this topic over the last couple of years.
Yes, they are. I've even heard recently of a couple more people that have been pulled over. And what happens is they usually pull you over for something else. Like maybe you have a taillight out or they thought you were speeding or something. So they pull you over, then they check and they see that you're not properly licensed to drive the rig that you're driving. So what they do is they take you out of service, which means you cannot continue on your trip and you have to wait for a properly licensed Class A driver to come and get you and your horses.
So your horses just sit alongside the road while you're waiting?
possibly sometimes, yes, for hours till somebody can come and get you.
What a nightmare that is.
And I know. And then, of course, if they want, they can
Arabs
give
love
you
waiting in the trailer for hours
fine.
Along the highway.
Yeah. I know. Yes. So, yeah. And then you've got the, you know, the whole legal thing with the liability issue. If you get in an accident, even if it's not your fault, if you don't have the proper license to be driving that rig, your insurance could choose not to pay your claim.
So what size is your rig?
My rig, actually, I have, it's a smaller living quarters. It's 3 horse with a 9-foot short wall, but it's 21 and a half feet on the belly part of it. So it's not as long as most horse living quarters, because most of them are about 24 feet. So mine's like 21 and a half, but the GVWR on it is 14.8. So basically, if your trailer is over 10,000 or your combined vehicle, and it's not what the actual weight is, it's what it's rated for. So the total between the truck and the trailer, if it's over 26,000, then you need the Class A license.
What's your truck?
My truck.
What kind of truck are you driving?
It's a new one-ton dually, cabin chassis. Yes. And so the two together, what it's actually rated for is definitely over 26. Now the actual weight, because I've weighed both the truck and the trailer, they both weigh about actual 9,000 pounds.
Oh, wow. But it's rated, so they go by what it's rated for. And
what it's rated for. Mm-hmm. So, and then going and getting the test, it's almost like watching, like, it's kind of hilarious because, like, there were three of us friends that all went at the same time. And even though we went into some of the same DMVs, we were getting different answers, getting told different things. Our tests weren't uniform in how they were performed
Are you doing it in your own vehicle?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, you have to test in a vehicle that's rated for that weight.
So what do they make you do in this test? I assume it's a little different than the car.
It kind of, yes, definitely different.
Parallel parking would be tough, you know.
Yes, in California, they do make them do that.
Really?
They do even more tests in California. Yeah, you have to do, first you start with the written test. And then once you pass that, then you can make the appointment to do your driving skills. And there's like three sections to the driving skills. The first is the pre-trip inspection, which is where you have to know your vehicle inside and out. You start under the hood and you explain what everything is.
Oh, really?
And how it works. Wow. And that everything is, you know, properly mounted, properly filled, nothing's leaking, nothing's, you know, cracked, bent, or broken. And you've got to go through your entire rig and explain everything, you know, your tires, your rims, your lug nuts, how you're, you know, everything's hooked up, every light. You have to point out every light, what it is, and that it's, you know, that it's working and blah, blah, blah. Then you go through inside the cab, you explain how everything is inside the cab that works. Once you get through the pre-trip inspection, which a lot of people fail the first time because they don't realize how involved it is and how much that they need to know and point out and the proper terminology to go through that. Then if you get through that part, then you start with the driving skills. The next part is you have to pull forward. You have to get the front of your vehicle within in Nevada, a 30 inch box. You can't go out of the lines. And in Nevada, we're not allowed to get out and look. In California, they let them get out and look and see how close they are or whatever. Then you also have to back up. And I'm not really sure what the distance is. It's, you know, a few hundred feet. And you have to straight back and you have to put the rear of your trailer within that same 30-inch, position. And, I have a backup camera on the back of my trailer, which was really nice. So I got that part. And then you have to do a dock backup from a 90-degree dock where you have to pull up and then back up and turn your entire rig 90 degrees and back up into basically what they consider a dock, which mm-hmm. is basically lines with cones. You're not allowed to touch the lines or the cones. And every time in Nevada that you pull up, they take a point off, and you're only allowed to lose so many points before they fail you. So I practiced and I nailed that part. My first try, I didn't do a single pull up. I backed right in and got it. Yay. Then the last part, you think you're done and you're stressing because you're like, you know, I don't want to screw up. And you know, if you start turning your rig too soon or too late, you're just out of luck. It's not going to go where you want it to go without you pull up. And so you get nervous. Then the last is the actual driving on the road. And that actually took over 50 minutes of the driving test. Yes. They have you drive residential on the freeway. You got to do turns. You got to prove that you know which lanes to be in, how to signal, how to do an emergency stop, and all sorts of stuff. So it's not, like you said, it's not just passing a regular driving test for a car.
Now, it's a Class A non-commercial. Does that mean that you still can drive a tractor trailer truck? You would have to get a commercial license for that?
Right.
Or could you haul for other people and have them pay you if it's a non-commercial license?
If it's a non-commercial, right. So I didn't take the test for air brakes. So like a rig that has air brakes, I wouldn't have the endorsement to drive that. But, you know, like any horse trailer rig, I pretty much, I'm legal to drive.
Now, and except if you're getting paid. If you're getting paid, then it has to be a commercial license?
I believe so. And, you know, examiner even told us that, you know, if you get pulled over, don't even tell them if your friend is contributing to pay for your gas, because that will make you commercial. Huh. So you're
hauling horses to a show.
Yes. Yeah. And we're only doing it for our own pleasure. We're not trying to win any awards or prizes, because that puts you in commercial.
Well, that would be true in your case.
Yes, that's what I told them. I'm like, are you kidding? Endurance riders only spend money. We don't make money doing this.
You're not a rainer or a jumper.
There's no prize money in this. No, it's all just we spend it.
So now, you've done this now, and do you have to? I assume that the fee is much higher for your renewal every year.
I don't believe it is. I paid another, I think it was $40 or $45, and it renewed my license for 8 more years. Oh, and I got a brand new license for 8 years.
And does it change your insurance at all?
I don't believe it does. I think one of the things it does change for Nevada, and it might for other states, is that like if you get pulled over for DUI, the number is like half as much. And I don't even know what those numbers are. But so if like normally before with a regular car license, you could drink one beer. Now, you know, if they test you, it's like half of that amount.
So if it's like 1.0, it's a half.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Whatever that is. I mean, I'm just super careful. I won't
different for that too,
drink
I think.
Even one drink and drive. So yeah.
And so now every state's different for the commercial and non-commercial licenses too, but you need to check with your state.
There are federal minimums that apply federally. That's why this is such a big issue. However, individual states such as, say, California, they've gone even further and they require even more. In California, they don't have a non-commercial Class A. They just have the commercial. So all these poor people that are horseback riders and endurance riders, they've got to go get a physical done. They've got to, you know, renew that every year, you know.
So that's good. Do you still have to do the logs and everything too then?
No, we don't.
Oh, you don't. And do you have the driving restrictions, 8 hours or whatever? You have to.
No, because we're non-commercial. Okay. Now, like we were saying, if you're hauling or somebody's paying you or you're a rodeo person and you're winning money, then that puts you in the commercial category where you do have to keep the logs and you know, do all of that stuff and have the physical done and all sorts of stuff. So, and California also is more the tests for the Class A are similar. Like you've got to do the pre-trip inspection and all the skills and driving and everything. I think they require even more than we do. Like, I just had to do the pull up and pull back, the dock back and things like that, where in California, they also can have you do a parallel park or, backing from one lane into another and some other things. So
I can't even parallel the park the truck without the trailer.
Well, I can't say this was a bad thing to do because, since I recently got the new truck back in August, it did force me to have to learn everything under the hood. And
yeah,
where
nobody
everything
takes time
is.
To do that. Nobody does.
I know. Yeah. And, you got to check. I mean, gosh, I was so nervous about the whole thing. I didn't want to go, fail on some dumb technicality. So we went through the entire rig. And I now have new tires on the trailer. We've got new lug nuts because we were worried the old ones had a little bit of rust on them. Just every single light, if there was a light that might have had the cover on it might have been cracked, even though it was perfectly good other than just a hairline crack in it, it got replaced. So we went through the
You're
whole rig.
In the best shape you've been in a long time.
We are. It's as good as new practically. So, but I got to learn everything. And the backing actually was really good for me. I've been backing up my rig like a pro. I've got to go through two different gates at two different angles to get my trailer backed into the barn. And I've been doing it just... I make it look like I know what I'm doing.
Look at you, so, class A.
I know.
Well, let's talk about your endurance tip for the month. And we're talking about drugs. The legal kind, right?
The legal kind. Okay. So one of the things I learned when with this recent bout of the vet intervention with my horse having the impaction was that the vet was able to call in a prescription for him. And something I was luckily smart enough to do is I got on an app on my phone called GoodRx, and there are several different ones, so you don't have to just use that one, but you might want to compare. So what I did is I put in the drug I needed to get because it was on a weekend. Of course, the horse never has anything wrong during business
happens.
Hours on a weekday.
Yeah.
It's always, Friday night
Nigel
or
got
Sunday
hurt too,
morning
Saturday.
Or whatever. There you go. Yeah. So she says, what pharmacy do you want me to call it into? So I typed in what I needed and it pulled up all the local pharmacies and it gave me the price. And I told her the pharmacy with the lowest price. She called it in and then I went in and picked it up and just showed him the thing from the app with the coupon number on it. They entered it. The last prescription I just picked up for Bo, I saved $187 on.
Wow.
Yes.
And this using the GoodRx app, which is the one that people use, right?
Yes, exactly. And basically, some of these prescriptions, whether they're for your horse or for human, it's the same medication.
Right. Well, I know that Jennifer's gotten here at the Publix grocery store, which is the big one around here. Uh-huh. You can get some of the medications for free.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't remember exactly what, but
that
I remember.
That doesn't work with horses, though. I'm pretty sure nothing with horses.
Well, it does because the vet
really?
Just calls it in and says gives a person's name.
Oh, okay.
You give a person's name. You have to name, like she could say, he could say, Nigel, not be lying. They just don't know whether it's a person or an animal.
Okay. Well, that would be sweet. That's great. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know, I didn't even think about it. And that app is free too, right? I don't think that one.
It is. Yeah. It's free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's GoodRx is where
it is. GoodRx. And there's other ones. Once you even type in anything hinting at prescription on Facebook, the ads will start pumping up.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And you don't even have to type it in. Just say it out loud and your phone
will
hear
you.
Just think
it. Yeah. Just think it. And Facebook knows.
We've had that happen about 10 times in the last 2 weeks, especially.
Isn't it a little spooky sometimes?
Oh, yeah. Because that the only way they got that is through the microphone.
Because they're tracking
through the
you.
Phone. Yep. That's the only way is they heard it through the microphone. Because you didn't type it in, you didn't search for it, nothing, but you mentioned it and it's there.
There it is.
Yeah,
they
that's
know.
Not coincidence. Yeah, that's not coincidence.
Exactly.
And that is kind of spooky. Yes, it is spooky, to be honest. All right, let's go to Distance Depot and find out, what are we talking about this month? Do we know?
We are going to be talking about how to carry things when you ride, saddle packs and some of the nifty new tights with pockets on them and water bottle holders and things like that.
Kind of important for endurance riders to carry stuff.
It is for anybody. We need to have our, you know, whether it's chapstick or water, cell phones.
All right, let me get Karen on the line here. Karen, of course, has been coming
Kristen.
On our...
Kristen. Oh.
Yes, you're on the line already. Let me get Kristen on the line here. She's been coming on the show since we started doing this years and years ago. And she is from Distance Depot.
The Distance Depot. This is Kristen.
Hey, Kristen. It's Glenn
and Karen.
How are
Good
you?
Good morning.
Hi, Glenn and Karen. How are you?
Good.
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 Hey, before we start into talking about endurance, I just wanted to remind everybody that Horse Radio Network labeled merchandise is available at Distance Depot. It's the only place that carries it. If you go to Distance Depot, I think you go to DistanceDepot.com/HRN, right? Isn't that how we do it? Or you can also go to HRNstore.com. If you go to HRNstore.com, it brings you to Distance Depot page. You can get logo wear for Horses in the Morning or Horse Radio Network. You can get hats and jackets and saddle pads and all different kinds of stuff. You can get stickers. So if you really like the show and want to put stickers all over everything, we have Horse Radio Network and Horses in the Morning stickers all available at Distance Depot. All right, I got the
Absolutely.
Plug in.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. And we've been doing some of them, and the logos look fabulous.
I got to tell you, I wanted to tell you this. We just did our listener cruise. We did the Horse Lovers Cruise. We just got back on Saturday, and several of them had the hats they had made from you guys.
Oh, how fun.
And your stitching, and I'm not just saying this because we've had to battle finding good stitching. Your stitching is unbelievably tight and excellent. I mean, the logo comes out looking spectacular.
Yeah, they do. They look fabulous. And I guess you saw the one with the, because I know you've seen it in pictures, but now hopefully you've seen it with the sun.
The Horses in the Morning?
Sun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is unbelievably good. I mean, we've tried
Came
a couple different
nice.
Local people here, and the stitching always looks loose and just isn't tight.
Right.
You use more stitches is my guess. And you know, that's the reason, you know, there is an upcharge for the embroidery, but it's because it is so good. And there's so many, it is really good. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm glad you're happy. Yeah. They're fabulous. They look great.
I will put, I'll put a picture. I got a picture with the two girls who had the hats and
good.
I got a picture with them, and we'll post that, on our Facebook page too. So. All right, Karen, you can take over now. I'm done plugging HRN stuff.
All right. Well, Kristen, we're going to talk about how to carry stuff on our saddles this month. So tell us about some of your saddle packs.
Okay, sure. What I will say is we have a whole page dedicated to saddle packs and cell phone holders and different bags. Of course, you can type in, you know, the word saddle pack, but honestly, the easiest way is just to go underneath For the Rider and to our saddle packs and cell phone holders page. And there you'll find pretty much what we're offering. It's funny, as I'm looking at it this morning, I see a couple that are missing. So we're going to get those added on to that. But we have a ton of different styles. We've had the Easy Care Stowaway packs for, you know, as long as we've been doing this. So nearly 14 years. And they're sort of in a transition period right now, actually sort of selling out their colors and going to just black. So if you want a color,
get
them while they're still available. Okay. Yeah, because they are sort of transitioning over to all black. But there's pommel packs with water bottles, without water bottles, just water bottle holders on the page. And, of course, we have candle packs in the same, you know, you can choose it with a water bottle or without. I have a pommel pack that I use by Easy Care, and I just add my own water bottle. So you can do that, too. They have lots of pockets to store your hoof picks, hoof brushes. You can put an Easy Boot in them if you're riding with one in case you lose a shoe. You know, a light jacket, a halter, whatever you want to store. We've got big roomy bags by Cashel and Weaver. And we also have a fairly new company that we've introduced in the last few years. It's a Made in the USA product, which is, we always like that. And the company is called Trail Max, and they make excellent quality packs. heavy canvas, really heavy duty zippers, and lots of ways to anchor those packs down.
I got to tell you, Kristen, I saw Trail Max for the first time at WESA when we were there, and we were looking at all of their stuff, and they have panniers for serious packers too. I mean, they got all kinds of different stuff, but it is well made. It's really well made stuff.
It is very well made, and you know, they would stand up to the rigorous use that our riders are putting them through, for sure. And they offer the same. They have a 1 liter water bottle holder too, and it has, you know, enough room to put your keys, maybe even your cell phone if it's not too big in that. Which, you know, I don't know. A lot of our riders are wanting to keep their cell phone on themselves. But if you're that rider who wants to put it in your saddlebag, of course, all of these bags will accommodate your phones. But we do have cell phone holders specifically for the rider. So the horse holster.
That's our friend Brooke here. She's our good friend. Yeah.
Yes. She's a great gal.
Yeah.
And she's been doing super things with these. So not only can you wear it on your thigh or your calf, you know, it will just Velcro around. If you don't want to wear it there, she's now made it where you can wear it as a belt. So, if you have a belt on, basically you have to slide it through the horse holster. But that keeps the phone on you. That way, should you become separated from your horse, you still have your phone, which is a great idea. And they're big and roomy and fit most of the larger phones. Of course, your smaller phones will fit in there, too. And then there's a separate pocket for money or keys or something like that, too. So that's a really nice product. And then we have an armband by Fitletic. We've got two, actually. So one's a little smaller, and then that's the Surge. The Forte will fit up to, like, I think an iPhone 6 Plus is what it says. But it has a clear front so you can see it, and you can actually work the phone through the clear front and still be able to touch it and make it function. So it's a little harder to hear in there, in my opinion, but, you know, you can always take it out, too. So lots of great options on that page. We also have, you know, stowaway utility belts and easy boot bags just for an easy boot. So smaller bags. That Trail Max company makes a little pommel pocket for the front, which would also be perfect for, you know, smaller items. So lots of good options on there for sure.
And you also have tights that have pockets in them, don't
you? Yes, of course. Yeah, yep. So many of the companies, the Carrots tights and the Synergy tights that we have, so many of the companies anymore are coming out and making the pocket on there, which is super nice too, because then you don't have to wear something extra. So, and you would just visit those on our tights page under For the Rider.
Okay, yes, those are awesome. It's so convenient to be able to just have your phone or put your vet card or your map in that pocket and just reach down and grab it. You don't got to go hunting for it.
Really do stay in there. People are like, I'd be afraid it would pop out. But the way the tight, you know, the pockets are made, they really do stay in there. They're anchored in there pretty good.
They are.
Yeah.
Terrific. And if somebody is interested in ordering any of these items, how would they find you?
Well, they can visit thedistancedepot.com and find all of our good products there. You can type in searches or look on the left-hand side navigation for what you're looking for, or call us toll-free, 866-863-2349.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Kristen, for joining us again. And have
a great
day.
Thanks, Kristen.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sorry, I was distracted shopping. there are a lot of cool bags. What do you use? Do you carry an actual saddle bag of any kind?
Rarely. I do a little bit of a pommel. I have like a really old one. You know, that's us endurance riders. Once you find something that works, you just use it to death, you know, forever. As long as it keeps lasting, you keep using it. So I just have like a small one for the front. And then, mainly I ride in a saddle that actually has water bottle holders that are like the kind that you use on a bicycle that holds my water bottles.
Oh, really?
So
they're plastic?
There's no, So there's no bounce, nothing to bounce or anything like that. And it's nice and secure and easy to, you just reach back and pull it out and it's, yeah, works great. So, but I've used, you know, different packs over the years. The thing I have found, if I get, you know, some of these larger packs, it's just like having too much clutter in your house and you can't find something.
Yeah.
You know, when you're riding down the trail, you want to be able to just find it. So I find that you know, the simpler, smaller type
less
packs.
Is more.
Less is more works better for me because then I can actually find stuff.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, you got, you know, it's you got to get in the program there with coordinating where everything is and, you know, being able to reach it and find it and get to it if you need it and without having to, you know, open up every single compartment that's there. So the smaller ones work better for me. But I know some people like to carry, you know, quite a bit of stuff. And
well, Distance Depot, thedistancedepot.com is where you can find that. Mm-hmm. And of course, all of our logo wear as well. So now one of the conversations that come up a couple times in our auditor room is what app people use to track their riding. And I know that we use, Jennifer and I tend to go with Ride with GPS, and I tend to use that because I ride a lot. I also use it for my bicycle. As a matter of fact, you and I are friends, so you probably see my miles piling
up. Yeah.
And that's on my bike, though, not driving the pony usually.
Right.
So yeah, I don't go 35 miles driving the pony. He would die. So that would be. But one of the other apps that's out there right now is Equilab, and we wanted to have Equilab on. We're going to call Sweden right now. I think he's in Sweden. It's a Swedish number anyway. Uh-huh. Adam is with Equilab, and we're going to talk about how this one is different. And yeah, have you used this one yet?
I have. I've used it on several different rides. It's actually it's very unique. It's pretty neat.
Okay.
It will tell you how much time you spend on a ride. In which gate, like trot, canter.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello, is this Adam?
Yeah.
Adam, this is Glenn and Karen from Horses in the Morning.
Good morning, Adam.
Hi. Yeah, sorry.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. You're on the air with us right now. I just want to let you know that.
sorry?
All right, Karen.
All right. Well, I've been using your Equilab app, and so tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so Equilab is one of the world's biggest app for equestrian today, and what we do is that we found ways to use the sensors in a phone to measure the movement of a horse and then transform it into like insights for the rider. So like as a rider, we realized a couple of years ago that it was a lot of like when you were training, you had to concentrate on a lot of stuff. It was really hard like to actually grasp what actually happened after training. And a lot of riders you're using like horse diaries and like try to keep track of what actually happened. But in reality, it was maybe like half the story. So we found a way of using the sensors to gather data and then to transform it into insights for the rider. So everything from the gait you had during different parts of the training to the number of transitions, the turn distribution, the length, of course, and a lot more information.
And you can also use this, I see here on your website, to track. So if somebody at home wants to track you, they can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we it was like a half year ago, we built like a feature was we had a lot of riders like giving us feedback. They were like in a stable and they had these like whiteboards where they wrote up when they were riding out alone. Mm-hmm. But then like if something happened when they were riding out, the issue could be, of course, that like something happens and it takes like up to an hour after that until someone realized that something has actually happened. So it was like the live tracking feature, which enables your friends or family or your stable friends to track you live when you are riding out. So if something happens, they can come out and help you.
Mm-hmm. And you're able to share this, I see, on social media, your training?
Yeah, of course, like all data, like collected in Equilab, you can share to anyone, actually, like both to that or to other, like Facebook or Instagram or something like that. So a lot of people I know use it and they share all the data like to Instagram to keep the program there for friends and family.
So
okay,
now, let me go back to the
go ahead.
One thing, Karen. It automatically tracks whether you're walking, trotting, and cantering. Does it do that by speed or by, you know, because some horses are faster than others? How does it do that?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like
my pony's pretty like slow. Somewhere. I'm just saying. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we use a speed as a parameter, but it's not like the main. It's just like an add-on. Because of course, some horses have really fast trot, and they can have like a slower canter, and some is walking real fast. And you can like change that as well.
And then there's gated horses too. I mean, yeah, that confuses things even more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's impossible. Yeah. Yeah. Like Icelandic horse in here in Sweden is really big. And they have like a tilt. What we realized really early on was that that is, of course, not possible. So what we do is we use like the motion sensors in the phones. They have like the accelerometer and the gyroscope, which is in all phones. And we use that like to track the movement of the horse. Like how you are moving as a rider because you have the phone on you. And then we're able to use the data together with machine learning. And then we are able because we've done that on like 100,000 of horses now, we're able to be able to detect exactly which kind of gait you have, which kind of speed you have, which kind of beat you have, and like which stride length you have as well.
And where's the best place to carry our phone when we're using this app?
Yeah, so we have riders having it everywhere, I would say. So a lot of riders have it just in the pocket, in their pants, but as well, in an armband on your arm, or you can have it in your back pocket. We know people have it in their boots as well. Some people have it on the horse. And we try to adapt it so it works on all places, so the rider can have it wherever it fits them best. And then we know, depending a little bit on the horse, some places may be better than other, depending on the case.
Now, available in the basic free version, and then what's added when you do premium?
Yeah, so in the basic, we have almost all the training data. And to be able to track the data. We have a calendar so you can plan both your own trainings and together with your co-riders or together for many horses. We have a social part in the app as well, which is sharing your trainings. All that is free. So most of the app is free. What we charge for is the live tracking feature, and we charge for some extra data such as weather, on your trainings and some more detailed graphs and some parts of the calendar as well.
And so how does the profiles work? So if I have more than one person riding my horse, can they each have their own profile?
Yes. So it's supported to be built for equestrians. So we both support many horses, so you can add up to how many horses you have, and then you can add different co-riders on each horse, and you can add your friends as well, which only follow the horse but not training it, as maybe your veterinarian or your trainer. We try to support all these kind of cases that are, it's a real network in the stable, so we really try to support all those kind of cases. And the good thing here is that if you add for example a co-rider on a horse, you can both see the horse training and see the development of the horse, but you can as well see your own development and not see your co-rider's trainings, only see your own trainings. So you can both track your development you are doing yourself and the tracking development of the horse.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. And is this app available on iPhones and Androids?
Yeah, both Android and iOS. And we support Apple Watch and Android Wear as well.
Oh, good. Okay. And it's Equilab, EQUILAB, correct?
Yeah.
A couple more questions for you. So can you do miles per hour as well as kilometers per hour? Because I know you're not here, so that's why.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So we do miles per hour, and we have a lot of different kind of, we try to support all over the world. UK has some and US has some, and we often say it as the default when you download the app first, but you change it in settings however you want it.
Ah, got it. Okay. And you guys, I see, even have smart watches here too.
Yeah. So Google Wear and Apple Watches we support at the moment. And at the moment, the Wear OS, you don't even need to carry your phone with you on the Apple Watch, we are releasing soon a version which is standalone there as well.
Okay, cool. Neat. So that's a, like an app for the phone, for the Google Wear.
The Google Wear is like an app for the watch, and then you have the watch on you, and we get all the data from there. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. That's very cool. So that's neat. I really like this. I like that how it's set up. I've actually been playing with it while we were talking, and I do like it set up. It's interesting. Yeah, I drive a carriage, and I'm wondering how it would function for that.
Yeah. So for carriage, you either need to have the phone on the horse, or you will not get the gait correctly during the training because we need the movement of the horse because you can't use the speed.
Gotcha.
But what we've seen a lot of users doing is that they have like their old phone and using that to actually track the movement of the horse. So they put like their old phone on the horse and they use that to track the movement.
Yeah, because I don't want to put my regular phone on the horse because that could go bad.
No, exactly. No. Me neither. Yeah, I know what it is. So a lot of people use like their own phone. They just charge it, have it stable, and they put it there and they have it like connected to Wi-Fi after training. So then like all the trainings will be synced to your own phone as well. So you can just use that.
And what's it run for the premium? How does that work?
So it's $9.99 if you buy it monthly, and 30% discount if you buy it yearly.
Okay, cool. Okay. Well, this is very neat. Yeah. You know, and obviously, I think more and more people are, I mean, you must be doing pretty well because more and more riders are starting to use these now than ever before.
Yes, look, we have over 500,000 users all over the world, and we have it in 11 languages now, and we grow in like every month. And I think for us, we try to do things that help equestrians, and we have a lot of ideas and things we want to improve and add to that. So I think it's so much you can do like that is it hasn't been done really yet. And what we saw was that like it was a lot of like these small apps, like one person something to build something. And we really want to do it in a good way and like make progress work, I would say. Like you don't need to be able to have an engineering degree to use it. It should be super simple. And we are continuously building and we're adding new features, I would say, every month.
Wow. It's a neat little app. I've been real happy with it. Well, gosh, Adam, thank you for joining us. Time is it where you are? Just curious.
So it's 5. So it's end of the workday now.
Okay. Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad we didn't get you up.
Adam, are you a rider? Do you ride?
I didn't ride before this, but I'm in a riding school now. So I've been there for 2 years now.
Oh, cool.
And I'm getting better. But I wouldn't call me. Actually, it's my co-founder that is the real rider. He has a stable and a horse. For me, I'm just trying to learn and try to be far right.
Are you, what kind of riding are you doing?
So we are doing all kind of disciplines now. We haven't really got into one. My co-founder is doing show jumping.
Oh, cool.
But we are just learning the basic and trying to get better, not falling off.
That's our goal forever is to not fall off.
I know. You need to fall off 100 times before you're a real rider.
You need to break a few bones too, so add that to your list.
I just regret I didn't do that when I was a child instead of now. Now it's
it hurts more now.
More bad stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, it hurts more. You know.
That's right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Adam. This is great. We appreciate you joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a good evening.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
So you can find this at equilab.horse is where you find it. And just search for Equilab on your phone. I searched for it and came right up. I think this is, if you're, you know, we hear about rescues all the time, and especially for endurance riders. If you are, and this isn't necessarily on a ride, right, on a competition ride. If you're out practicing and you're riding deep into the woods, this tracking feature is worth $9 a month.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, you come off and it's going to take hours to find you because nobody knows exactly where you are. Your horse may come back and you're out there, So I do like the tracking feature on it.
Yes. the tracking feature is good. And it's actually a really useful app for endurance riders, because one of the things we found when we were going out, when we first started using it, is, okay, so we're going 12 miles. How many minutes are we spending at a trot, at a walk, and at a canter? And we'd come home and it would show like that we cantered for, you know, 2 minutes and 34 seconds. So it's like, okay, we need to work on that. So it really helped us improve, you know, what, like we would set a goal. Okay, now we want to, you know, increase the amount of time we're cantering or decrease the amount of time we're walking, because it turned out we were walking, you know, a whole lot more than we realized we were, you know. And so that kind of, we found it really useful for helping to, you know, improve our, you know, the horse's fitness levels.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the others, like we talked about Ride with GPS, they've really made for bikes, you know, and made for other purposes. And then horse people kind of just adapted mm-hmm. them.
Yes.
This one is made for horse people. You know, it's made for
exactly.
Horse. And even it's forget about the walk track canter, you know, even if you didn't use that, mm-hmm. it's still a functional app, you know.
Right. You know. Right.
Regardless.
And it's pretty accurate, because a lot of times what I'll do is I'll bring along one of my Garmin GPSs at the same time when I'm using a new phone app, because I want to compare to see how close they are. And so I do that, you know, for a few rides until I'm comfortable that the app is actually pretty accurate. And this one is actually pretty accurate. The only thing I had happen was one or two times we would stop during the middle of our ride to let the horses eat. And I would maybe get off the horse and then just sit down. And because I did not move, the app went into like pause mode.
Do you have to unpause it, or does it unpause automatically?
It didn't. And that's how I first met Adam, was I sent them a tech request and said, hey, the app kind of went on to pause, and I can see right here on it, 8 miles in on this ride, it stopped and it didn't start again. And I think it was because I stood still and didn't move at all for, you know, a certain amount of time. So once I realized it was doing that, then I made sure that, you know, to be more aware of the fact
that
I stopped. Yeah, I know. So that was just one minor little thing. And
what did he say? What did he say about that?
We got to talking about it, and just it was something he was going to look into to see that, you know, I think it was just the fact that I was sitting still and not moving for a certain period of time that it didn't wake itself back up. And it may have been possibly something on my phone.
Yeah, I was going to say the phone was actually getting in the way of that.
That's what it probably most likely was. And then after that, I've used it a few more times and it didn't do that again. But then again, I probably, you know, maybe either changed a setting on my phone, or I just wasn't sitting still long enough for it to do the pause thing. But other than that, it's worked 100%, you know, wonderfully. So you'll have to give it a try and see what you think.
Okay, I'll definitely do that. And then I know something you've been using for years and years and years and works every time, and that's Renegade Hoof Boots.
That is Renegade Hoof Boots. They're made in Arizona, the United States, and they come in several different colors. And there's a couple different models based on whatever the shape of your hoof is. One fits a rounder foot better, one fits a less rounder foot. So if you need help with that, go to the website, renegadehoofboots.com, and you can send a tech request. If you need help with fitting or adjusting cables, or even just putting your Velcro straps on or changing them out, there are lots that the Renegade has their own YouTube channel. So go to YouTube and just search for Renegade Hoof Boots there. And you can always send a request or give them a call, and they're more than willing to help you.
And lots of fun colors. Pretty.
And lots of fun colors, so you can match your tech. And
glue-ons and regular boots. Glue-on, whichever way you want to go. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
So renegadehoofboots.com.
Renegadehoofboots.com. Well, we're going to go from apps to Class A licenses to hoof boots to saddle fitting. And that's something that's a little important when you're riding 100 miles in a day. It's kind
it
of
sure
important.
Is.
Yeah. People care about that. And your horse yes. really cares about that.
Definitely. So, yes. Yes. You need to be comfortable and your horse needs to be comfortable. So we're going to be talking with Jackie Finneroli from Stonewall Saddles. Okay, Jackie, let's talk a little bit about saddle fit. And can you kind of describe a little bit about some of the special things regarding endurance horses that you face when it comes to fitting saddles?
Yeah, of course, endurance riding is one of the most, ambitious and critical sports in horseback riding, where saddle fit is paramount. And so when I do saddle fitting for conventional treed saddles, the first thing we have to do is measure the horse's back. Horses do come in all different sizes and shapes, and so fitting the back can be tricky. I do use the Dennis Lane equine back measuring system, or we call it the CARD system for short. And the reason we use that is the data that's generated can be stored in a database of horseback shapes and sizes. And so we can say with some authority that there are no breed backs, say Arabians. They come short, round, and well-fleshed, mm-hmm. and also angular, you know, racing machines. So really the first step in accurately fitting a horse's back is measuring.
Right. So, and tell us also, I know that especially with even my own horses, you see this all the time. Their backs change from season to season and year to year. So mm-hmm. how do you deal with that with, you know, your saddles and fitting?
Yeah, there is a lot of opinion about how horses can change with condition, the season, and weight gain. But again, there's not a lot of data to compare horses. And again, this CARD system of measurement, because we can store the data, allows us to compare horses over time. And what I found is that, to a large degree, the horse's skeletal structure determines their shape. Mm-hmm. But changes in weight, significant changes of, about 200 pounds, can change saddle fit. What I found is normal seasonal changes, say at the beginning and the end of the ride, are not typically enough to kick a horse into a different saddle size. But changes in weight of a couple hundred pounds can make a difference. And one interesting thing is a lot of horses are nicely conformed with regular shaped backs. There are exceptions. But to a large degree, saddle fitting problems come from just guessing about the horse and guessing about the used saddle, and you hope for a match, rather than a horse's, the exception is that a horse is so unusually conformed that he needs a custom saddle. Most of the time, it's just chosen the wrong size for that particular horse, mm-hmm. rather than an unusual back feature.
And how much adjustability do you have in your saddles?
In the Living Bar saddle, this is a patent pending technology that I believe is going to revolutionize the saddle world. I might be a little bit grandiose, because the living bars themselves morph in three-dimensional shape. We don't rely on cushioning or bending or flexing in the technology. The saddle bars actually change shape to match the horse that they rest upon. So we have a lot of flexibility in the horses that we can fit. And I claim that our saddle fits about 80 to 85% of horses out there right out of the box. And those horses that are the exception are the swayback horses and the downhill horses. And then those we can still accommodate, but we may need a little hands-on shimming help. But for the vast majority of horses, the technology adjusts itself.
So what materials are those made out of, the bars?
The bars are made of a series of carbon fiber ribs. And so they're quite stiff and strong. And the chassis of the saddle is also made from carbon fiber. And that was chosen because of the stiffness of the carbon fiber material.
Wow. Wow. So how much do your saddles weigh?
The basic saddle weighs about 13 pounds without stirrups. So it is a lightweight saddle, and some additional weight can be stripped out of that for heavyweight riders.
Okay.
What's the biggest, mistake? What's the biggest thing you see as an issue with endurance saddles and people who are using them?
Mm-hmm. Well, a common mistake I see is with saddle pads. Now, saddle pads are not going to make a poorly fitting saddle fit, but they can improve the fit or ruin the fit of a saddle. And one common mistake I see is too thick a saddle pad. Generally, especially with heavyweight riders, they think more pad is more better. But you can have so much pad that you prevent the saddle from settling down onto the horse's back, and you can create a bridging situation. A lot of times horses with sore loins, they're carrying excess pressure in the loin because of bridging. Either, you know, the horse has a certain amount of sway to the back, and so the saddle bridges, or using too thick of a saddle pad can cause bridging. So that's a common issue I see. A lot of, there seems to be a trend now in endurance saddles, but a lot of saddles have a lot of rock on the bar. Now, rock is a term that's analogous to sway in the horse's back, and you want those two things to match. But a lot of saddles today seem to have a lot of rock on the bar. It gives the impression of a lot of flare at the front and the rear of the saddle, so we don't dig into the horse's shoulder or loin, but you really reduce the footprint of the saddle, and that can also lead to sore backs. So so that's what I see in is a common saddle fitting mistake.
Yeah, it goes back to our theme earlier in the show, Karen, that more is not always better.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So more flare. So I say if you have a lot of flare at the hitching post, I can guarantee you're going to have too much once you're moving and riding. And I would encourage all riders to check the flare. That means, you know, how the saddle is moving away from the horse's body at the shoulder. Check that at the walk, because the amount of flare you find when the horse is standing at the hitching post versus when they're walking is wholly different. And that's because of the difference in the way the horse is carrying themselves between standing and walking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, do you make the saddles yourself?
Well, the saddles, our living bar saddles, are completely made in California. The carbon fiber components are molded by a vendor, and we do have a leather worker who's sewing most of our leather components, and then we bring those components in-house in our shop here in Southern California, and we do the final assembly and building in California here.
Oh, neat. Neat.
Yeah.
How long does it take for you to make one from start to finish if somebody, say, they place an order now, mm-hmm, when they get the saddle?
Well, if it's not customized, we'll be able to ship in a week. And this is, again, because we're making one saddle where the bars can morph to match whatever horse they sit upon. And then the seat and the stirrup of our saddle is movable. So it essentially can fit any rider. By eliminating the customized work that's gone on in the past, fitting a particular rider or fitting a particular horse, we can really shorten the production time.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, once we get the carbon fiber components in-house, then the build of the saddle can take place in a week. And this really allows the saddle to retain its value, because if you had to sell the saddle later on, you change disciplines or someone was going to move out of horseback riding, then the saddle can fit any future horse and any future rider. Yeah,
that makes sense. So where's the best place if somebody wants to learn more about your saddles to go? Your website, Facebook?
Facebook has been an amazing resource. We're a very small company. Our riders tend to be passionate. So if someone wanted to see and feel and look at a Stonewall Living Bar saddle around the country, one of the best places to do that is with our existing riders sharing their saddles and experiences. Uh-huh. And we can connect that way on Facebook.
Okay. And they would look up Stonewall Saddles?
Stonewall Saddle Company.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Jackie.
Well, I'm very pleased to receive your call and talk with your audience this morning. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you, Karen.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Well, now we've talked about saddles, we're going to switch gears totally again. You're just all over the place today.
Going to Mongolia.
Yeah, we went from Sweden to the West
California.
Coast to Mongolia. So in Mongolia, there's so much there. We've been talking about Mongolia so much in the last couple of years because of the Mongol Derby. And then there's been a couple of other rides in Mongolia as well that we've had people on from. I don't know why Mongolia has become this major horsey tourist destination, but it has. And then you have another one today. Let's talk about introducing her.
We do. We have Julie Valu from Horse Trek Mongolia, and she runs the Valu Foundation, which supports children's charities in Mongolia. So anybody that goes on one of her rides and treks, part of that fee for that goes to support her foundation, which is helping children.
That's really cool. All right, let's take a listen. This was recorded earlier. You got a chance to record it last week, and we're going to hear all about riding in Mongolia. And you can go do it too.
Good morning, Julie. Thank you for joining us. I am so looking forward to hearing about your adventures and the treks that you do in Mongolia. And your website is horsetrekmongolia.com. Can you give us a little bit of an overview about what it is that you do?
Sure. I moved to Mongolia about 10 years ago, 2010, with my husband. And we have a small family foundation. So we started working with children who scavenge in the garbage dump. And then because I was living in Mongolia, I started riding, as you do. So sat on the horse for the first time when I was 50.
Wow.
And fell in. I know. it's a good way to change the last half of your life, I'll tell you that much. And then I just fell in love with the culture, the riding, the horses, and all the rest of it. And so with Horse Trek Mongolia, this really lovely family, Sarah and Baggy from Mongolia, started. They'd had a small trucking business for a long time, and so it just expanded and it grew. And so we started doing these really, really amazing horse treks across Mongolia to raise money for the project that we were working with the children. So that's the Children of the Peak Sanctuary Project. So we now have 325 children off of the garbage dump and being fed, cared for, and educated in two kindergartens that we've built,
wow.
Plus a whole bunch of other projects that we do and funded in large part by the treks that we do. So there's a whole variety of different kinds of treks, something for everybody, essentially. But the one that is probably most interesting to the people from the endurance world is the Gobi Gallop, which happened. The first one was 2013, so about a year and a half after I first sat on a horse, I was riding 700 kilometers across the Gobi Desert to raise money for the project. Uh-huh. And that has just escalated from there. Now it's something we've been doing this year, it'll be 8 years. And we've raised over $543,000 for the kids with it.
Terrific. So what's involved if somebody wants to come and do the Gobi Gallop? What do they need?
So the Gobi Gallop is, I'm sorry?
Yeah, no, I'm just curious. What does somebody need as far as their skill level or preparation and stuff to come and do something like the Gobi Gallop? And tell us about it. You know, how long is it? You know, where do you ride from and to and that sort of thing?
So the interesting thing about the Gobi Gallop, I think, is we do a different track, a different route every year. And so that's, part of the fun part for me is I get to go and scout the routes. And now we've ridden, eight different routes. And so sometimes it's a circle starting from our base camp and going out 350 kilometers and back, because the Gobi Gallop is a minimum of 700 kilometers in 10 days of riding. So that's 430 some odd miles.
Wow.
I think it's a true endurance event in the respect that we take two horses per rider. So our horses are some of the best cared for and best trained in all of Mongolia. And I've heard that from several people, not just for me, but they're fed all winter and cared for and ridden and whatnot. So that in June, when the Gobi Gallop happens, they're able to actually go out and accomplish the full 700 kilometers. So all of the horses do 700 kilometers. It just depends on how much they're ridden. So mm-hmm. when they're not being ridden, we have the beauty of this 15 or 17 or 18 horses running in a herd alongside us. So that's it's not just the Gobi Gallop. It's not just the riding. It's one of the longest, horse drives in the world. So it's in order to come and do the Gobi Gallop, people, when they think about Mongolia, they think about sort of crazy, out of control horses, a high risk factor and a high danger factor. And so we are very, very present and clear about the fact that that is not us. We, partly because I sort of, started organizing it. And, when you start riding at 50 and you don't have those memories of thundering across the paddock, when you're 14 years old bareback, like so
with no fear
have.
Of getting hurt.
Yeah. I had fear from day one. I had fear of getting hurt. So we're really proud of the fact that we've only had to ever send one person home in an ambulance. And that was just for an unavoidable hole in the ground. But people need to be, obviously you need to be a good rider. But, one of the things I'd like to tell people is that you don't have to be like an exceptionally fantastic rider. You have to be able to canter and, be comfortable as a canter and whatnot. But lots and lots of people who just sort of do regular trail rides certainly have the horse capability for it. And that's mm-hmm. because we do two horses per rider, and even though it's called the Gobi Gallop, most of the riding that we do tends to be fast trotting. There is some galloping. There's lots of cantering. Most days there'll be a couple of hours of a canter thrown in for good measure. But most of it is trotting. And as I'm sure anybody who rides endurance anywhere on the planet can attest, 80% of it is mental, actually. You are going to be tired. It's going to be, one of the hardest things you've ever done because, getting up and doing the same thing day after day after day, mm-hmm. at a certain point, the fatigue level hits the, you have jet lag, you're not familiar with the horses. And so it's a hard thing. But if you are mentally tough and you have a spirit of adventure, and it really helps if you've done some riding outside of your own sort of comfort zone, overseas somewhere, uh-huh. or taking on some of the big challenges that if you've already taken on a big horse challenge, it's easier to do the Gobi Gallop. So that essentially there is there's a big interview process, so people have to apply, and then we screen them, and so. We've always only taken 10 people on the Gobi Gallop, but starting in 2015, we're going to start taking 15 because the demand is getting so great. that we've decided to open it up to an extra 5 people, which is good news for people out there who want to come and take on these challenges and raise money for the kids, because that's really what it's all about.
So do you guys all ride together in a group?
Generally speaking, yeah. We ride together in a group. And the endurance of the horses being so important, basically, Baggy, our head guide, is the fellow who sets the pace. And essentially, I mean, it's certainly not nose to tail, as you would know from looking at pictures of Mongolia. It's very wide open. So you can, you know, you can take your horse off over there, sort of, you know, away from the group and ride if you like, if you're looking for that sort of quiet spiritual time, or just not have the person beside you talking. So you can go off and ride by yourself. But yes, we do ride as a group. And then we have a crew that comes along, that sets up camp and takes down camp and, you know, cooks all the meals. And we have a doctor that comes with us and a really great relationship with the International Medical Clinic and whatnot. And so, so the focus is really on the riding and of course on the raising the money for the kids.
And so what are the accommodations like each day when, once you finish the ride for that day, are you putting everybody up like in a tent or how does that work?
Tent accommodation. Yeah, basically we have, everybody gets a tent. We do actually encourage people to share a tent. If they really don't want to, they don't have to. We found that people have a better experience if they share a tent with somebody. So we have tent accommodation. We do take along a gare, a traditional Mongolian gare, and, set that up, generally speaking, as a place for shelter if the weather is bad, or a dining hall, you know, some cooks, just a place to gather that's a little bit warmer and out of the way, you know, out of the way of the wind, which tends to be the big part. And so we've done the Gobi Gallop pretty much everywhere in Mongolia. Well, obviously, I can't say everywhere, but we've done one from east to west and west to east and north to south and south to north.
Okay.
So we have run into just about every kind of weather and terrain.
Conditions.
And difficulty. Uh-huh. Yeah, conditions. And so we are, one of the reasons also that we're expanding next year to 15 riders is that all of the logistic stuff, as the kinks have been worked out of it, if you pardon the expression, we figured out how to do all of this stuff, because sometimes you have to take feed for the horses and sometimes you don't, and sometimes you have to take water for the horses, and having a camp crew that knows how to set everything up and take everything down, and you know, getting a good selection of meals. Like, the food is not fancy, but it's filling and hearty, and it's really it's a really spectacular ride too. People who come, they always use words like life changing and
sure,
like that.
Yeah, those you kinds know? Of tracks definitely are you know, a once in a lifetime kind of experience. So if somebody wanted to do this, how far in advance do they need to start planning and preparing?
So it's interesting. We're full now for 2020. We've been full for a while, actually. And so we're now taking applications for 2021.
Okay.
2021 is going to be a slightly different Gobi Gallop, because it's going to be from the end of August to the beginning of September. Because in 2021, we're doing our gigantic ride, which is the Blue Wolf Totem Ride, which is 3,600 kilometers in 84 days.
Okay.
And that's sort of the granddaddy of them all. That, because I, there's so much amazing flora and fauna and history and nature and culture and everything in Mongolia. And having done the Gobi Gallop for 8 years, and explored as much as we have explored, I'm just wanting to put together a ride that will encompass as much cool stuff as we can find, and really have an opportunity for everybody to get really away from it, you know, and go and spend that amount of time traversing this like magical country. And I don't know, I suspect endurance riders all understand the lure of just being away from the world for 3 months.
Yes,
on horseback.
Exactly. And so this long ride that you're planning, when does it start? How far are you going to ride each day? Do you have days off?
Yeah, we have. So we're starting on May 3rd, 2021. And we're starting in the Gobi Desert. average, it will be about 50 kilometers a day. But because the purpose of the trip is not to get from point A to point B, it's about visiting every cool thing that we can find. Some days we'll go 20 or 30 kilometers, and some days if there's not so much to look at, we'll go 70 or 80. So it's going to be a big mix of different kinds of intensities and speeds and, mm-hmm. And stuff that we're going to be visiting and witnessing and experiencing. And we have a rest day every 10 days. So you ride for 10 days and then you have a rest
day. Wow. That's a lot. that's a real test of endurance for the riders and the horses.
I would love to be able to say it's the longest charity ride in history, because of course it's for the kids as well. But it's not, sadly. There's been a couple of people have done, I'm sure you've heard of, the 5,000 kilometers here, there, and the next place. But I think it's going to be a pretty unique experience to go 3,600 kilometers. Uh-huh. And hopefully not have any fences, no gates to go through. This is one of the beautiful things about Mongolia, is it's just all wide open and it's public land. And they are such a welcoming people. Their culture is so open that you literally can camp anywhere. I mean, literally anywhere. If you felt like going and setting your camp up right beside somebody's gear, they'd be fine with that. There'd be no problem. Not that we're planning on doing that, but it's just, uh-huh. it's just really fantastically freeing that. It's the 17th largest country on the planet, and it is the least populous. So there's only 3 million people in the whole country, and 1.5 million of them live in the city. So the countryside has 1.5 million people in it. And so it's, and history has sort of tread lightly upon Mongolia with respect to like changing the land. I mean, if you're riding in Europe or, many places in North America, there's fences, there's roads, there's buildings, there's the ruin, there's like the history is still there. But because they've always been nomadic in Mongolia, the history is just lying out in the middle of the open steppe. It's one of the most beautiful things. Like, they have these standing deer stones, which nobody really knows. They're from the Bronze Age, and nobody really knows who or when they were put up exactly. Mm-hmm. And they're thought to be perhaps, they're stones with really intricate carvings of deer on them. And so you can see them when you're riding along. This is something that in any other place on the planet, I think, would be, there'd be a big fence around it and you couldn't go up to it. Treasured historical,
right.
uh-huh. Archaeological sites. And you can just ride up to it and you can see them. Because it's on the steppe and like they're bigger than people, you can see them for, 8 or 9 kilometers. And so you can just ride up and go and see like the living history on the land. It's really remarkable. It's a very special thing about getting to the wilderness,
Uh-huh. Tell us about the ride to the reindeer.
So the ride to the reindeer is, we do this one every year. So in addition to the Gobi Gallop and the Blue Wolf Totem Ride, we have about 6 or 8 rides that we do regularly. And we also do custom rides if people want to come. But the ride to the reindeer people or the Satan live in the Taig, way up northern Mongolia, almost at the Russian border. In fact, we always need to get special permission from the army to go up that close to the border. And so we go up there every year, and the reindeer people are the last nomadic, truly nomadic reindeer riders on the planet, I've heard. And so they follow the reindeer all season long. They ride the reindeer. They milk the reindeer. They do not eat the reindeer. They eat wild reindeer. But when you go up there and you get a chance, you get to ride a reindeer, and you get to see they have basically teepees. And you are so far off the grid that the grid doesn't even exist anymore. The one village that we often go and visit is, you have to go through five miles or so of bog to get there. And so the car can't get there. The only way to get in is through, is on horseback. And so, it's a stunning ride up there over mountains and up high alpine valleys. And I mean, it's really beautiful. And then you come around a corner and it just opens up onto this huge open valley dotted with all these teepees and like hundreds of reindeer running around.
Wow.
And
neat.
It's just magical. It really is a special, special thing that until recently you weren't really allowed to go up there. And so, but they have the same problem that many, many other sort of small groups of indigenous people have, that, the children tend to be leaving for the city and whatnot. And so as a way to try and make it possible and viable for them to be able to stay and have, maintain their thriving nomadic lifestyle. they started letting small groups of people come and visit them. So I can speak Mongolian, having lived there now for almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's really special for me. The shamanistic culture is, that's where it's strongest in Mongolia. And so a lot of people come and they want to go see a shaman and ride a reindeer and whatnot. And it's it sounds very touristy when you say it like that, but it's the farthest thing from touristy that you can get. It's a truly amazing, authentic experience. It's one of my favorite treks. And we're going there on the Blue Wolf Totem as part of it.
Neat, neat. Okay, so we have, I see your website is horsetrekmongolia.com, and you also have the valuvfoundation.com. Are you also on Facebook?
Oh, yes, we're on Facebook. So there's like the Facebook is Horse Trek Mongolia or Blue Wolf Totem has its own page. The Gobi Gallop has its own page.
Okay, all right.
The Valuv Foundation has its own page, and Twitter and Instagram as well. We're firmly ensconced in the 21st century.
Terrific. Thanks for joining us this morning, Julie. I appreciate you coming on as a guest. And this sounds like you're doing a world of good for these children and providing quite an adventure for those that want to go do an adventure of a lifetime.
Thank you. My pleasure to be on. I appreciate you giving me a chance to talk about the things that I love the most, which is children and riding and horses in Mongolia. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you.
Okay. Have a good day.
So, Karen, when's the last time you've ridden for 84 days in a row?
Oh, I have.
That's a long ride.
That's a long ride. That sure is a long ride. I thought you were going to ask me when was the last time I rode a reindeer.
Yeah, well, that too. I mean, when's the last time you rode a reindeer, Karen? I'm going to post a picture of her Julie with the reindeer on her show notes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know you could ride reindeer. I've seen them pull sleighs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But no, I knew that because there's been another guy I'm friends with on Facebook that does this trek every year up to the reindeer people. And he lives there with them for like a month at a time.
Wow.
Eric. So he hangs out with them and they gave him a reindeer. He has his own reindeer now. So it's an interesting thing to think that still exists in the world.
I know. What, you know, wouldn't that be a great vacation, though?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. You know, I know some people go on
not the 84 days of riding.
Things,
that wouldn't be great for but, me.
But this would be, yeah, this would be a vacation where you're getting quite the workout.
Yeah. Yeah, but you get a day every 10 days off. So
I know. Yeah. There are 10 days. That's a lot. When we did like the cross country XPs, we would go maybe 5 days and then we'd get 2 days off.
Yeah. Give your butt time to recover. So,
and
you
can't
imagine, do you bring your own saddles? I can't imagine the saddles are all that comfy.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, what do the people that have done the Mongol Derby say about the comfort of riding those?
Oh,
Mongolian
well, they're all half dead by the time they get 7 days done. So, I mean, it's like, and they're going for 7 to 10 days.
Yeah. Right.
Now,
they're all tough.
There is a difference, though. She said these horses are worked with. These are pretty good horses, and the ones they're riding in the Mongol Derby are pretty much wild. So
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
So that,
this
there
sounds
is a
like
difference.
A little saner.
And you probably don't have to drink the mare's milk unless you really want to. So there's that. this is very cool. It's valuvfoundation.com. And I love the fact that she's supporting the children's charities there. And I mean, these are truly the poorest of the poor. So that's very cool that she's doing what she's doing and that she moved there to do it. So that just says this is her life. You know, this is
I know. And
she
started writing at 50 years old.
So exactly. So that just goes to show, too, you can change things up totally in your life after
you can. And you hear that from a lot of endurance riders. They didn't start riding till later in life. So, you know, we hear from people all the time that are listeners on the show that say, oh, I'm too old. And it's like, you're not too old. You can still start riding endurance or just riding in general. You're never too old.
Well, before we run out of time, the national convention's coming up, right?
Yes, the AARC National Convention is coming up March 6th and 7th at the Hyatt Regency in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, it's down our way, huh?
So you guys are going to need to go check it out, do some shopping.
Are you coming to the East Coast or don't you cross the mountains?
You know, I didn't plan on it this year, especially now that I have these vet bills.
Yeah, exactly. Funny how that works.
Yes. I mean, if I hadn't had the vet bills, let's see, I could have gone to the convention. I could have bought a new saddle. I could have went to Mongolia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're running into the same issue here.
Yes. So how is Nigel?
It is the 6th and 7th, and it is in Jacksonville, Florida. You can find out more details. Go to AERConline.org is where you can find out about it. Yes. And it's not too late. You can. This is one, I think, if I remember right, you can pretty much show up and sign up.
And, yeah,
it's
just, and they have a trade show, so you can shop, and they've got a lot of seminars for that are always informative and educational and fun.
And it's tied in with the Southeast Endurance Riders Association from down here in the Southeast. Nigel is, she took the bandages off yesterday. For those that don't know, Nigel is Jennifer's, my wife's horse, who she's been trying, it's a big thoroughbred that she takes to endurance rides and was looking forward to taking to some endurance rides here in Florida because we are in season. And as we're coming home from the cruise on Saturday, he decided to tangle with the fence and shred his back leg. So his hawk is the size of bigger than a softball. He's got a gouge out of but it doesn't seem to be, we're hoping it's not deep enough to cause any damage. The vet doesn't think so. And then below that, he just shredded it, you know, and took skin off and it's all wrapped up. I have not seen it since the initial pictures, but she did it yesterday and then rebandaged it and everything.
Good.
The worst part is he doesn't like being in the stall at all, at all. And he's been locked in the stall for 3 days. So that means Scooter's been locked in the stall for 3 days. And everybody's just all happy out there. So she's going to try and turn him out. The bad part about these injuries, as you know, is you really don't know for a couple of weeks whether it did affect anything else. Because you can't get it x-rayed or really even ultrasounded when the swelling's that big. So you got to kind of wait and just see what happens. So
poor guy.
That's where we're at.
Well, I hope
now.
He heals quickly.
Yeah, she's going to put him out for a little bit in one of the smaller paddocks. We'll see. Well, or he'll just screw it up even more. One of the other.
That's true. There is always that option.
It's a horse. Well, I don't know what's going to happen, and I am not going to predict. But for once, it wasn't my pony's fault. The Hackney didn't do it. So thing everybody said when we talked about it, what'd Scooter do? Nope, Scooter wasn't involved. He wasn't even close. It's usually the Hackney pony's fault, but not this time. All right. Well, that's it. Thanks for putting such a fantastic show together, Karen. Where can people find you and your blog and all that you write about?
Well, just basically right now, find me on Facebook. I've still got to get my blog back up, but I'm working on it.
We need to fix that.
Yes. Otherwise, just look for by name or NV Endurance Rider on Facebook.
Very cool. And all the links to today's guests will be in our show notes. You can find the show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. For auditors, you know, we're doing a special thing for auditors now with a pre and post show, but that'll be Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays with Jamie and I. I haven't convinced Karen to do that. I haven't even talked to her about it yet. But we'll talk about that next month. But it mostly will be Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays episodes that you'll get your special content. Otherwise, you can find us in all the normal places and all the normal podcast players. And we do have a Twitter account. It's Horse Radio on Twitter. And also, don't forget our app, iOS or Android. You can download the Horse Radio Network app right there and find all the details about all of the shows. And you can listen right on our app if you don't have a different app player. That's it for today. Thanks, Karen.
Great. Thank you, Glenn. Everybody, wear your helmets.
Happy riding. Driving. The endurance drivers out there, all 10 of you.